Hey y'all, we are Back to the Basket, a weekly NBA podcast where we discuss and dissect the best league in the galactic universe. I'm your host, Wahaj, and with me today, like every week, it's Kevin, aka Lil Kev. What's up, Kev?
Hello, world.
No Richard today. He's been replaced by somebody bigger, better, and more with more journalistic credibility. Sorry, Richard, we apologize. Only for this week, though. We are happy to welcome Blake Murphy of The Athletic Toronto. He used to be with the Raptors Republic, and he's a very credible writer. And please do follow him at Blake Murphy ODC on Twitter. In this episode, we touched on pretty much the Raptors' upcoming season. We talked about JV and how he's going to match up with the other bigs in the league. We also talked about how the Raptors bench mob is gonna play out. And then we asked him our five famous questions that we did in our season preview episode on the Raptors. We also got into his food habits a little bit. That was a little fun little segment we did. And we couldn't let him go without touching on the Jimmy Butler situation, since he's a media guy, and how that is going to unfold. So thank you for listening. And thank you, Blake, for coming on our podcast and gracing us with your presence. We're excited for the new chapter and for the new season. So thank you, fans. Thank you for listening once again. And without further ado, we're very excited to bring on Blake Murphy, formerly of the Raptors Republic, currently a Raptors writer with The Athletic Toronto. Hey, Blake, what's going on?
How's it going, guys?
Not too bad. Congratulations on the new gig.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Still getting adjusted a little bit, but, you know, getting my feet under me. But it's been fun so far.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a big change.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how much it'll be a big change, like, day to day. It'll be, you know, not having to do previews and recaps and, like, JV sprains his toe in the third quarter and leaves the game. That kind of stuff will be nice to not have to do, all that little stuff that eats a lot of time. But, you know, bigger picture, I'm still going to approach everything the same way, and still kind of the same job, just a different spot. So we'll see. Right. Should be good.
Yeah, man, excited for you. Ready to look forward to reading your new articles.
Thank you.
So we're going to get right into it, because I'm sure you don't have a lot of time, and thank you for doing this. The first question that you mentioned in your mailbag last week, that you're a weirdly picky eater, about random stuff. Like, you don't like potatoes and cheesecake. So, yeah. Two-part question. Part number one. If OG Ananobi baked you a cheesecake, would you eat it?
No, I don't. I would rather eat everything Serge Ibaka has served on How Hungry Are You So Far than trust OG Ananobi to make me anything. There's no way OG can cook. I would bet everything that he can't.
I mean, baking is very simple. It's more like a basic science, right? You follow the steps.
It is.
You can't get it wrong, right?
Look, you would think that. I've eaten bad baking before.
Wow.
You know, that's I don't think OG has it in him. Not yet, anyway.
Yeah, I think he'd get the base right, but the cheesecake filling would be the hard part, right?
Yeah, I mean, the cheesecake filling would be the part that I'm not really that excited about anyway. So maybe as long as he's got the base right, maybe that's all we need.
All right, so this is a good segue. And the second part of the question was, what is one thing that if Serge served you, that you would just get up and leave?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if there's anything like that. I'd try whatever. I mean, like, I don't like some stuff, but there's nothing I can't eat that I'll throw up or anything like that. I will say, if it was like, nah, I don't know. I don't even know if there is anything. It'd be fine. I'll eat whatever. I'm a picky eater, but, like, I will try whatever. It doesn't really matter. I'll try any type of food or ethnicity or any kind of flavoring. So I'm excited. I'm going to try to work the angle and get on How Hungry Are You at some point.
Yeah, it's weird that you're picky, but not really picky.
Yeah, it's just like I have individual things that I just like don't touch. I don't know. It's weird. I've been like this forever.
That's really awesome that you said that you don't eat potatoes, but you'll eat worms. That's fascinating.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, worms is protein, man. I had like at the CNE a couple years ago before they started doing all the union BS. I had like mealworm spring rolls and some like deep fried crickets and stuff. I don't know. It's I don't really care. That stuff's protein too. So.
I think after the cronut, everything went downhill. Like after that whole debacle. All right. Leads to our second question.
Yeah, I got another question for you. So in a recent piece about Jonas Valanciunas, you pointed out how he's going to work against Derek Favors in their preseason game against the Jazz. We talk actually a lot on this podcast about how JV just owns certain bigs in the league. And who do you think is the number one player in the league that JV just routinely destroys in the NBA?
I don't know about destroys, but I think the guy whose head he's in most is Andre Drummond. Drummond is the career leader in biting on JV's pump fake. So
I'm sure and even that.
Yeah, and I'm really interested to see what that's going to look like this year because, you know, Casey's there and he's surely going to be hammering home, you know, don't jump on that pump fake. And Drummond and JV, as they both kind of expand their perimeter games, you know, that matchup has gotten more fun and gone from just traditional in the post to more outside at least a little bit. But you know that Drummond is not going to be able to help himself and he's going to bite on one of those for sure the first time those two teams play.
It's like Masai said, right? You're way better than Drummond.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that after the strides Drummond took last year, but it's a fun matchup for sure. And I think JV has like a pretty sizable edge long term. I think maybe I'm just extrapolating from a couple of playoff games before they both got hurt, but like I think JV has Hassan Whiteside's number two, which is awesome because Whiteside is so easy to get frustrated.
Right. It's kind of easy to get into under his skin. I remember that matchup in the playoffs against the Heat where it was just JV versus Whiteside until they got injured, right?
Yeah, they both went down at the same time, right? Didn't they?
Yeah, pretty much. More. I think it was, you know, a game apart or something like that.
All right. So, you know, a huge part of the Raptors following last season was the development of the bench or the bench mob. And, I mean, they're not household common names, but guys like Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam spend a whole lot of time in the G League. So you, as somebody who spends a lot of time with them, with the 905, who are a couple of players that you think that we should be looking out for that would crack an NBA roster?
Yeah, it's interesting. So right now the 905 don't really have a roster. There's so much turnover in the G League. Even last year, you saw they made the finals a year after winning the championship. And the only player who finished the season on both those teams was Negus Webster-Chan, who was like a deep role player for both of those teams. And so, you know, Siakam and Van Vliet and Wright never made it back down. Poeltl only played two games there, but he never made it back down. And then the guys that you saw there last year when they went to the finals, you know, there hasn't been a ton of promotion. Lorenzo Brown turned that two-way deal into an NBA roster spot. He slides in as kind of the 13th man for the Raptors. But with how much depth they have, I don't think he's going to have a big NBA impact this year or much of a role at all unless a point guard gets hurt. And there's no one else really that from that squad that projects. The one guy who was most interesting to me long-term in terms of NBA potential was Malcolm Miller. And he at Summer League dislocated his shoulder. I still think there's, you know, a chance as he rounds back into health for he's projected back in late December, early January. You know, maybe they can do something with him in the 905 at that point in time. But he was the guy who of that group last year, I thought had the most NBA utility. And then the one guy that, you know, is going to be down there a little bit this year is Malachi Richardson, who, you know, he took some strides between when they acquired him last year from Sacramento in the Bruno Caboclo deal to what he looks like now, but he needs a little bit more time down there. So this year, I think less than the last 2 years is going to be, you know, a little less interesting. That's a double negative, but I don't think it'll be as interesting from an NBA fan perspective down with the 905. But who knows? Maybe they fill out this roster. Maybe Chris Boucher and Dane Adel end up down there, and then those guys are kind of forming bench mob 2.0 in 2 years or something like that.
Yeah, I think it happens more so down the road in the season, not so early on, as the team's needs kind of open up as to who they are looking to sign when people go down, right?
Yeah, for sure. Like, you look this year, and with the Raptors' tax situation, they're probably only going to keep 14 guys on the roster to start the year. But you look, and they're going to be a little thin at center, and if Jonas Valanciunas or Greg Monroe or Serge Ibaka were to get hurt, you know, maybe one of those 905 guys becomes a good candidate for a 10-day contract if it's later in the year, or, you know, a quick call-up, and then you get sent back down if you're the guy that earns that second two-way spot. Whether that's, you know, I think Boucher and Eric Moreland kind of have the inside track on that second two-way spot. I think it'll go to a big. But you could certainly see a scenario, especially at the front court positions, where the Raptors might need to lean on that 905 group later in the year.
All right, sweet.
Yeah, Boucher did light it up in his hometown yesterday. That's for sure.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. That crowd was awesome.
It seemed awesome. They were chanting MVP anytime Kawhi had the ball too.
That ankle.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Really,
there's a decent chance that happens. So Kawhi being MVP. So
yeah, that kind of leads us into our next question. There, we noticed that and listened to your Raptor season preview on Dunked On, which was actually just released very recently. And we recommend our listeners to check that out for sure. As a Raptors fan, how did it feel when Nate Duncan said that we could win the Raptors could win the finals this year?
Look, Nate is a very smart guy whose opinion on these league-wide things I trust more than my own. He's also a Bay Area-based guy, so he would have a more intimate firsthand knowledge of things that might be red flags for the Golden State Warriors. I think it's pretty... You know, it's pretty interesting that a guy that smart and that close to the Warriors thinks there's a non-zero chance that either by injury or, you know, disrupted chemistry or just aging, that the Warriors are not quite as infallible as they've seemed the last couple years. You know, I think a lot has to break right for that to become a discussion. And on the Raptors side, you know, not only do things have to work, but they have to get by Philly and Boston and maybe Milwaukee, depending on... Milwaukee looks terrifying in the preseason, but, right. You know, we'll see how that looks in the regular season. So Toronto, you know, you can only kind of handle your own business. But I do think it's interesting that from a more national perspective, it's like, okay, well, you know, the Warriors have won three of the last four. Maybe it's not locked in that they're going to a fifth in a row and that they're winning a third in a row.
Yeah, what's interesting to me is the fact that, like, how much do you take from that? Like, how were you going into the podcast or the discussion? Did you ever think that you would hear something like this, or do you think it's so out of world to even hear the Raptors winning? Because, I mean, this team, let's face it, if they make it to the finals, that would be a successful season, right?
Yeah, the finals would be a successful season for sure. And I wasn't, you know, caught off guard to a crazy degree that Nate would think the Raptors would have a chance. You know, the Vegas odds have the Warriors as pretty strong favorites still, and the Raptors, I think, fifth in terms of likelihood to win the championship. At least that was where it stood last time I looked. And, you know, those aren't great odds if you're the Raptors and you're sitting there and the Vegas line is 14-1 and, you know, the Warriors are at minus 200 or whatever they are. But none of those percentages are zero, right? And I think, you know, the reason I don't, you know, I maybe don't lead with, oh, the Raptors could win the title is because I think that those odds are probably, you know, somewhere in the 5%, maybe even sub 5% range when you factor in that, you know, maybe they're only a coin flip to get to the finals with how strong the top of the East is. But anytime that percentage chance is not a zero, there's a lot of room for excitement because we've seen the last couple years, even with Golden State winning three of the last four titles, that injuries happen that, you know, sometimes that we are wrong about a team that looks very, very good. You know, I still think the likeliest case is the Warriors winning another title and then kind of separating it and opening things back up from there. But the chance is non-zero. And anytime it's not a zero there, there's a lot of room for excitement, especially when, you know, you're entering a season not only coming off 59 wins, but having added a guy who could end up being the best single season Raptor of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, you know, you mentioned the coin flip that it could be at the top of the East. What's your take on the matchups between the Raptors and the Celtics?
Yeah, it's really interesting to look at that because not only, you know, the last couple of years, there's been this kind of pseudo rivalry between the two teams where they weren't rivals and they didn't, you know, the games were feisty and chippy and close and fun, but there wasn't a real hatred there because they never got to play against each other in the playoffs. And they've kind of been measuring each other on the same thing of, you know, okay, which one of these teams is the second best team in the East after LeBron's team, which is hilarious and kind of sad, but also they've never gotten to go head to head to kind of figure it out. So it's exciting from that perspective. And then you look at what both of these teams are well suited to do in terms of having multiple playmakers and floor spacers on the floor at all times and having a lot of switchability with deep rosters of wings and being able to match up with different opponents in different ways. That series, if it happens, could be a real fun chess match in terms of lineup deployment and who's guarding who both ways. I think it would be a lot of fun. I do think the Celtics probably have the regular season edge if I'm betting on the Atlantic Division or the Eastern Conference standings, I'd probably take Boston slightly. Come playoff time, with how close those two teams figure to be, and obviously we're going to learn a lot over the next 82 games, but whenever a series is that close, the rule of thumb, I think, generally is take the team with the best player. And for the first time, really, during this run, if that series happens, the Raptors will definitively have the best player. And I think that probably gives them a slight edge in a playoff series, given how everything looks on paper right now.
Circling back to the Warriors, just one more question I had for you. When you look at the matchup, the Warriors are thin at the center spot, and their bench isn't very deep. Raptors have a bench mob. They run very deep, but they have question marks at the center position. So when they match up against each other, where do you think the advantage lies?
Yeah, that's tough. Obviously, Golden State, depth matters a little less come playoff time because some teams tighten their rotations and you're playing your best players more. Even the Raptors saw a little bit last year, some of the bench mob, depending on the matchup, were borderline unplayable. That was the case for some starters at times, too. If you're Golden State, I don't think you sweat the fact that the Raptors have an edge at the center position. Yeah, Jonas Valanciunas could go to work on the offensive glass for sure, and he's a great screen setter and a great rim runner. But I think if you're Golden State and you look at what Toronto can do on offense, if possessions are getting dumped inside of Valanciunas, that's a win for Golden State's defense. It slows the Raptors down. Lets them catch their breath a little bit. Valanciunas is going to improve. I only use him as an example because he's the best weapon Toronto would have to counter small lineups inside. And I think Golden State would take that trade-off defensively. Even though Draymond Green can't shoot the three at a high level, he's such an adept playmaker with the ball in a little bit of space that I think they'd be really comfortable pulling Valanciunas away from the rim. I don't know how that tilts. I think the depth thing is probably overstated as an advantage for Toronto come a playoff series, especially since the finals are usually seven games played out over 17 days where there's extra rest built in. But I do think, if you're looking at, okay, what is the 20th percentile, 50th percentile, 80th percentile outcome for these teams, depth helps a lot because you can afford to rest guys and not lose a step and keep some chemistry, keep guys healthy. The Warriors obviously have that too because they don't care about the regular season, but that's just a strength of Toronto's team in general, is that if they only want to play Kawhi 65 or 70 games at 32 minutes a game, and same for Lowry, they're going to have that luxury to kind of focus on the playoffs. Golden State might take that even more aggressive where, Draymond Green and Andre Iguodala don't even try until the playoffs. Who knows?
Yeah, this team tends to do that a lot. All right, so we're going to move into our fifth question, which it was, we did our season previews recently. We wrapped them up, and we asked five questions to Reddit fans on every team's thread as to, what do you think the season outcome is going to be for their respective team? And the first question for you, we're going to ask you five rapid fire questions, and you can answer them in as much detail as you want them to. The first question was, who do you expect to be the team's MVP? I feel like that's a pretty straightforward question.
Yeah, I'm gonna say Kawhi Leonard.
Wow. All right. Yeah, we don't need to.
No hot takes there. It could be the league.
No.
And obviously, who do you expect for the Raptors to make the biggest improvement this year?
Yeah, I think probably Pascal Siakam. I'm kind of on the fence between him and OG Anunoby. I think Anunoby is more certain to be a little better this year, given he had a first real pro offseason and he had such a strong rookie year. But I think if you're looking at range of outcomes, Siakam has the widest range of possible outcomes he could hit. He could take kind of a leap if the shooting and the playmaking hit the way some people are hoping. They do. And that's probably, a best case scenario that both of those things come along in a meaningful way. But he has a lot of paths to, taking another step forward. And we saw some of that last year. I'm not sure the league as a whole really understood just how much he was taking strides as a playmaker, especially in the open court.
Yes. Siakam's ceiling is really high. Even with the shooting, I feel like that's going to improve a little bit compared to last year.
There's only one way to go with his shooting is up. But I really do see the speed improving and the pushing the ball and the pace of the basketball game. He'll grab the rebound and just push the pace, find an open shooter is what I've seen a lot from him lately. And I think that's going to be a game style for the Raptors going forward.
All right, Blake, what do you think the team is missing the most?
My biggest concern is probably rebounding. You saw last night, if you watch a Brooklyn game, they started with Serge Ibaka at the five. Ibaka has had a decent preseason rebounding the ball, but in general, that's going to be you know, I think that'll be an issue that pops up. When Valanciunas is out there, Valanciunas is an elite defensive rebounder. Greg Monroe is a pretty strong defensive rebounder. Ibaka is not that. He's been fine for the power forward position for a stretch four who's, you know, out away from the rim. But if he's going to play the center spot, he'll have to be better defensively, and the team's going to have to crash better around him, especially because if Anunoby is playing the four like he did last night, he's also not a strong rebounder, or at least he wasn't as a rookie. So defensive rebounding is probably the one thing that stands out to me about this.
Yeah, game. I think they're going to miss Poeltl a little bit because as far as I know, Kawhi Leonard is not, that's one area of his game where he's not actually like elite. Even if he plays the wing position, so the rebounds will have to come from somewhere else, and that's going to be interesting to watch.
I will say the one thing that the Raptors do well, and they did more of this last year, and it's looked like it was a point of emphasis so far in the preseason, is having your bigs and wings focus on boxing out and having your point guards crack back and grab the ball. We saw that with Lowry. Lowry obviously had a huge defensive rebounding season last year. They like doing that with Siakam and Lowry and Van Vliet and Wright, because not only are those guys, the three-point guards, good rebounders for their positions, but then you have the ball in the lead guard's hand right away to push the pace in transition. So, you know, it's kind of an OKC style where Westbrook gets a lot of these rebounds because Steven Adams is just pasting everyone out of his way. And it looks like Russ is maybe stat padding sometimes. But really what that does is lets them get ahead of steam immediately after the rebound comes down without having to find the ball's way back to a point guard. So the Raptors do emphasize that a little bit, but still defensive rebounding, probably a weakness on
paper. Very good point. All right, so this is the most important question. What do you think this team's going to win? The predicted number for you?
57.
You were very strong on that one. Didn't have to think about it at all.
I had to think about it a lot more on the Dunked On pod. So it was like, it's in my head now where like I have to make sure I don't say a different number different places. So I've been hammering it in my head. You said 57.
Yeah, you can't have an inconsistent opinion. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, I think last year it happened once where like I did the Dunked On pod in like late August, and then I had changed my prediction by the time the season rolled around. I think it was a difference of like one win, but it was still weird to have different predictions out there. So I'm sticking with 57.
So you're going under, which I'm a little surprised, because last year they won 59 with DeMar, and they have a better player, in my opinion, with Kawhi. So don't you think that they could crack 60 maybe?
Yeah, they definitely could. I think when Nate and I were talking, I put the upside at kind of like, you know, the not even a best case, but like if things go well, they could win 63, 64 games. I just think that, you know, last year, one thing was they went 35-2 against bad teams. You know, you can't really bet on them doing that to that extreme a degree again. They, for the third year in a row, they led the league in double-digit comebacks. And at a certain point, you know, you have to stop getting in double-digit holes because that's exhausting to fight back from. And then part of it is just, you know, injury-wise, last year was once again like a pretty fortunate season for the Raptors, and they do have the depth to manage around it. But I think with the focus on April, with them wanting to experiment and try a lot more new things, with potential rest for Leonard and Lowry and Ibaka maybe and Miles and Green and who knows who else, I just don't think there's going to be as big an emphasis on the one seed and a win total as in years past. And you know, 59 was kind of a best case scenario for them last year. 57 for the record is still over the Vegas over under. So I'm still, you know, I think a little more optimistic on them than the market. I just don't see them like gearing up and really caring as much as they recently have about that one seed.
Team is built for the playoffs for sure. And I think that's where their aim is, because playoff success hasn't been friendly for the last few years. I'll be excited if they win 60. That's for sure. Okay, so I'm going to ask you, what are you most excited for this season for the Raptors?
Not to get redundant and simplistic, but Kawhi Leonard, he is like insanely good. I went back and I watched so much 2015-16 and 2016-17 Leonard this summer after he was acquired. And yeah, he didn't look great last year. And no, he hasn't looked 100% yet in preseason. But if this guy gets back to 90% of what he was at 2015-16 and 2016-17. You know, I mentioned it earlier, this is the best single season Raptor probably in franchise history, and the first time someone comes top five in MVP voting as a member of the Raptors. And that's, you know, there are a lot of things to be excited about with a new coach and a young core and a lot of fun guys. Having the best player that you've ever watched over 82 games is pretty damn exciting.
Yeah, it's very exciting. My family's in San Antonio. They live in San Antonio now. And I watched the 2014 finals, and it's incredible what he can do up and down the floor. I haven't seen many players do that. I think it immediately took me back to Michael Jordan in my early years, and that's a feeling that not many players can invoke, you know? So,
yeah, exactly.
Before we let you go, thank you for coming on. Just going to ask you about the Jimmy Butler situation. We'd be remiss if we didn't talk about it because of how it's unfolded.
Yeah, what do you want to know in particular, like through the Raptors lens or just in general?
I think they canceled practice today. Media availability was canceled. So what do you, as a reporter, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think it's weird. I think you know, yesterday, which was Wednesday at this point, was a little bit manufactured on the side of Butler's camp. Like, I think it was, you know, not entirely surprising that ESPN happened to be at Minnesota's practice the day that all of this happened and Jimmy Butler was able to get a sit down and kind of put the message out there. I think the players only meeting was, you know, probably necessary and, you know, a nice bit of, you know, message management, I guess, where, look, there's some conflicting information between the 2 days about what Butler said and to whom and how he treated certain players. But what I gather from the players only meeting is that this indicates Butler has kind of gotten it out of his system and is too competitive not to play. Now, from a greater market perspective, I think this is, you know, Thibodeau's happy. I think it's a bad situation for the Wolves in general, especially if the rumors that they assured Karl-Anthony Towns that they would trade Butler are true. If you're looking as a predatory team like the Heat or the Clippers or the Raptors or whoever else might be interested in kicking the tires on Jimmy Butler, I think this, you know, I don't know if this changes the market for him right now, but I think it increases the likelihood of a situation where a lowball offer could get him, say, closer to the trade deadline. I still don't see the Raptors really as a fit because I don't know why Minnesota would want to take Serge Ibaka back to match salaries. But, you know, it'll be worth kicking the tires on and monitoring the market. Because if things, you know, if he plays and things go poorly and there's more drama and they're worried about the relationship with Towns and Wiggins long-term, you know, their urgency to get rid of him and, you know, the presence of Tom Thibodeau might not be constant over 82 games the way things have sounded too. So this has been a lot of fun and very entertaining.
NBA never disappoints. That's the best part about it. But more importantly, do you think this hurts Butler's camp in any manner?
I don't think it's great for his reputation, of course, and I don't think, you know, I don't know if it's been handled the ideal way, obviously. I think as long as Butler is healthy, I don't think it hurts, you know, his market next summer all that much. There were already some concerns because of his age and his usage and the status of his knees in terms of getting that big max. He's still an all-star level player and one of the better two-way players in the NBA to where I don't think, you know, him being a bit of a competitive ass and maybe not the best teammate the last little bit is going to hurt the market for him too much, especially because when he's picking his destination, I would assume he's going to be picking it based on, you know, the ability to compete and possibly a second like-minded star.
That's a great take. Blake? We thank you so much for coming on to our podcast. You know, we can't thank you enough. But everybody, please follow Drake, a.k.a. Blake, at on Twitter at Blake Murphy ODC. You can read his work on The Athletic. Do you have anything else to plug, Blake?
No, that's about it. The Athletic Toronto, Blake Murphy ODC on Twitter. That's about it. That'll get, that's
all right, thank you so much for coming on, man. Real pleasure.
Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Have a good one.